7:21. Pete Sopcich. He is a retired Illinois State Police officer and currently the sheriff for Johnson County. And my friend this morning. Hey, Pete, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. How are you, Tom?
Good. House Bill 163, which is no longer House Bill 163, had its name changed. It's gotten a lot of attention from law enforcement across Southern Illinois, and that's where I've been talking to officers. Pete, there's so much. I wonder how we're going to get it all in, but it seems to me one of the more important parts of this is the altering of the legal status of police officers when it comes to indemnity.
Correct. They want to take away qualified immunity. And, you know, right now, if a state's attorney or judge, you know, in the public's viewpoint, makes a poor decision, makes a mistake, you can't sue them. With officers, their only defense is if they're acting in good faith, they don't intentionally break the law, and let's say they make an arrest based on everything they thought was correct, and the rest is no good. You can't just sue that officer personally. Now you can sue the department, and they're indemnified. You just can't sue them personally for making a mistake, just like in any other profession. But they want to take that away, which will result in, you know, you have, and I hate to pick on Chicago PD, but they were under such scrutiny that you can, you know, the people I've talked to up there have said they've just shut down. They're not responding to stuff like they used to because they are worried about some kind of confrontation that they're going to be hung out to dry on because nobody's supporting them. So you're seeing the murder rate, the crime rate go up. If you take away this, one, you won't be able to hire any police officers because no one would be that ridiculously naive to take a job where you're putting your own livelihood and your own family's resources on the line. And you can get sued for anything. I think we all know that, Tom.
We're a highly litigious society, and when we say sue, lose your house and lose everything, there's also the issue of collective bargaining when it comes to the legal status of police officers and their departments.
Well, and the thing is, when you start talking about collective bargaining, and I see, like, what is some other unions have supported this legislation. Well, they're all good as long as it's the other union being able to do it. If the FOP can't do collective bargaining, but they don't. But you know, you realize when you open this door, that means eventually it means correctional officers. It could be your Teamsters, guys driving trucks. You take away all this. Now, that being said, you know, I worked for the state police for a long time, and I was in a supervisory position. I'm the sheriff now at Johnson County. It is way too difficult to get rid of a bad apple, and union resources, they will use 99% of their resources to defend 1% of their bad apples. And my experience with my fellow ISP people will attest to it. They will say, you know, I don't understand why that guy keeps his job. Because 99% of the force is good, hardworking individuals, and they're saying, get rid of that 1%. They make us look bad.
You know, and when I talked to other police officers last evening on this issue, the complaints made about officers would be kept indefinitely, even if they are unsubstantiated. And it creates a class of law enforcement agent that I did not realize had a name, the euphemistically referred to as gypsies.
Correct. I mean, there are gypsy officers because they've made it so difficult to terminate someone that when it gets all the way to the end of the process, it's a lot easier for just the person comes in and resigns. That way they keep all their police credentials. Now, the training board's getting better on that, trying to track these guys. But they'll turn around and they'll just go from department to department to department, get in trouble, resign, get in trouble, resign. And eventually they end up getting arrested, usually what happens. And that's what we experience in the state police with a lot of these gypsies that would just go from one department to another.
All right, now the issue of drugs, and in particular personal use, meth and heroin, there would be a standard set for how much you could have for personal use. It wouldn't be considered a felony. And the fact that it almost sounds like we're giving up when it comes to fighting heroin and meth. And this proposal in particular, because State Representative Severance sent me a note yesterday that bill had been enlarged and told me that in a text yesterday morning, that they're among the proposals here was to legalize all drugs in many respect. And I find that very hard to swallow. I mean, because I'm looking at the note he sent, including decriminalizing all drugs, personal use drugs, meth and heroin. You know the effect that meth has had. I mean, when somebody proposes this, my first thought is they apparently, as I have been at a funeral holding a woman's hands who is the mother of a child in a casket, asking me, is my son going to hell because of this? This has me greatly bothered.
Well, you know, it's funny because you've always heard that cannabis was the gateway drug. And we are suffering in Johnson County because our youth are really getting into cannabis. It's more of that than drinking. But it's leading right into, you know, they get oxycodone, oxycontin, they're snorting this stuff. And, when, you know, the whole idea, they say, well, it's a victimless crime. Tell that to the people that are having their money stolen and their property stolen from their residences they're being broken into. The family members that have a family that, you know, in the end, when these guys are addicted to meth, they don't care to steal from mom and dad and grandma and grandpa. Their first thing is they want meth. Now, if you want to attack it from the right way, don't legalize all this. We're going to end up like Portland, where good people are getting addicted to heroin and doing this stuff. You know, you want to really attack the problem. We send people to rehab, and the minute they come out of rehab, they're sent back right to the environment that they came from, right back into the meth, right back into the same individuals, and they can't find a job, so now they're stealing, and they're back on meth. Why aren't they relocated? It'd be better for the government. They're going to spend all this money. Let's not waste it. Let's get with North Dakota and get a trade. Well, we'll take ours and send them up there. You send yours down here, and let's relocate them and get them a job. And they're not around these individuals. But just to legalize it, it's just going to spread like wildfire.
Yeah, and that's, by the way, in treatment, that's very often mentioned about going back into your old ways because of associations. Last night, I was speaking with former Heron Police Chief Quinn Laird. And he told me, point blank, this is a fundamental, detrimental effect on all communities and law enforcement if we do this. And I can't help but wonder, if I was going to back that statement up and pick one of the items from this bill, it would be cashless bail.
Well, a lot of people aren't familiar that, you know, aren't aware that, you know, the bonding procedure did change already.
Yes.
In Category B, you get $30 credit towards your bond. And I have seen it in court. I have personally seen where the judge has said, you know, your bond is set at, you know, $2,500, 10% applies, which means it's only $250. And I've seen the guy look up and go, oh, I can do 2 weeks. So he's only in jail 2 weeks, and then he's right back at it. If his bond's $1,000, he owes $100, he's in jail for 3 nights, and he's back out on the street. Now you're going to go with no bond, nothing? So you mean to tell me that I respond to a house where a guy's been burglarized and we catch the person running from the house and arrest him on the spot, and we're going to give him a ticket with a court date and let him go? What do you think he's going to do? He's just going to go to the next house.
And this is already happening right now. And Jason Olson in Polk County.
Right now.
Jason Olson, the Polk County state's attorney, had been mentioning this. He says, if you think that's the case, you talk to the people in Cypress. You talk to the people in Buncombe. They know this is going on. And people who read and watch the newspaper and listen to the radio and TV see the same names pop up and wonder, why is it the same names? Why isn't something done? By the way, yesterday, Jason Olson, the state's attorney I was just referencing, said Illinois legislature changed House Bill number 163 to House Bill 3653, SA1. In this, you cannot file an opposition slip to the bill unless they assign it to a committee. In addition, the legislature does not have to send HB 3653 SA1 through committee because the language is substantially similar to its original posting. So now this legislation can go directly to the floor for a vote. If you tried to distill this, because you and I only scraped across a couple of things here, we didn't cover everything in detail. If you were going to listen to, you know, now going right to the floor to vote, probably get the votes, how do you describe this bill and its effect on law enforcement, Pete?
Whenever you have a bill or anything and you start playing games with the name, changing it, you know, originally it's called Fair Pretrial Act. And, you know, when, like we said before with the fair tax, when the government uses the word fair, it's not going to be fair. And this literally will let criminals run the show. And it's already happening with people being arrested. We have a young lady, we arrest close 30 times in Johnson County. No prison time. And it goes on and on. Get ready, because you will be having to defend your own property. And it's going to be throughout the state. But not only that, who are you going to call when you need the police? Because no one's going to want the job, and the guys that show up aren't going to want to do anything because they're going to be afraid of being sued.
And I think that pretty much distills it down. You know what, Pete, I think there's one component, and Quinn brought this to my attention when I was speaking with him last night. the perception of police is that they're traffic police, right? That they're out writing tickets for speeding. That might be 10% of what you do. The other 90% fighting crime on this level goes unseen and underappreciated, and it's dangerous work.
You know what? When we respond to domestic violence, I really can't even recall the last time we responded to a domestic violent complaint where one of the individuals wasn't under the influence of a narcotic or alcohol. They were under the influence of something and are totally irrational. And that's usually what that is the biggest fear of law enforcement when we respond to that. It's not these other cases. It's usually domestics because it is so dangerous and volatile. And people don't see it because, you know, a lot of people don't know what happens after the sun goes down.
Yep.
They wake up in the morning and they're like, what happened? They don't even know about it.
Right. And it's bad. I mean, I watch some of these, well, in particular, the Heron Street Crimes Unit and what goes on there. And I think there's a lack of appreciation of how physically dangerous this is. Like the chokehold. You and I were talking before we went on the air. Man, that's not been endorsed in front of since L.A. in the late 80s, I think. Right? Maybe
yeah,
mid-80s.
Everyone's trained. You don't use groin, head, neck. You don't. It's the only time you could ever use any kind of chokehold is more of a defensive mechanism where you are, it is life or death. That's it. It's not to restrain somebody.
Right. And I've seen that, been there personally with the police officer assisting them. And I can tell you, I was helping the police officer. And my takeaway was, how do you do this job, man? How do you do this every day? It's hard on them. I mean, I've got friends of mine who drank themselves to death and everything else from law enforcement. That's a tough job, and we're about to make it tougher. Pete, final thoughts on this bill and what it represents for Southern Illinois, and any other thoughts from your position as a former Illinois State Police officer? Because I know Pete long enough to start to learn this, and I know this from my other friends in law enforcement, there's always a desire to do a better job. And if you're not doing better in training, then you're probably going backwards.
Well, you know what? I tell you what's really going on. And the state police really is having a problem with this. You know, when you start changing all this and making it harder and harder, so now you pass this bill. Currently, the state police can barely get enough applicants to send to the police academy, and they are our highest-paid, well-trained police force in the state of Illinois. They're the highest. They make more money than anybody, and they're struggling to get applicants. So what's happened is they have wiped away all their qualifications. It's easier now to get hired with the Illinois State Police than it was 30 years ago. And you think, well, shouldn't it be harder? I thought we were professionalizing this and had more restrictions. They've had to lower the qualifications because they can't get enough applicants. What's going to happen if they do this? The only people applying are going to be people you don't want to be police officers because there's going to be nothing left because no one else is going to want to do it. They're going to do something else. And I get it. This is all brought up by the Legislative Black Caucus. And, you know, there is a myth that the judicial system discriminates based on race. I've never seen it based on race. It does discriminate, Tom. It discriminates on the poor. The poor cannot afford a high-priced attorney to go in there and defend themselves. And when you have public defenders that have, you know, so many more cases, you know that in Johnson County, our state's attorney makes about $140,000. I think our public defender makes half that. He has to do private practice. He's got all these cases, no assistance. He's doing it all himself. So, you know, I've always said, well, why isn't the public defender paid the same amount as the state's attorney? And maybe these people would get a better representation in court. And it's not that the attorneys aren't good, the public defenders. They're just overworked. They can't meet with, they literally meet with their clients for 5 minutes before they go to court.